Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Sabbadukha nissavana nibbana sacchikaranathāya is why we're here. Tea. Tea is just the quotation marks. So that was, as many of you should know by now, unless you've been totally deaf during all these ordinations, that is the chant we do when somebody becomes a novice monk or a novice nun, that for the purpose of ending all suffering for the achievement of nibbana. And I'm sure that each one of you has had enough suffering over the last few weeks, certainly since the last range retreat finished. And I think many of you have had enough suffering. Enough! All these problems and difficulties and things not going right, and the pain and difficulty of being a human being, having a body and having a mind as well. And surely there must be an end of all of this. And that's one of the reasons why we have come here, to make an end of suffering. And there are two ways which people try to end suffering. And one is to train themselves to be better human beings so they don't make that many mistakes anymore. In other words, to try and train your mind in wisdom and compassion, to be a kinder, wiser person, which can let go of the difficulties of life, which means when things don't go right, you can still keep smiling. And when you're in your hospital bed, dying in enormous pain, you can still tell jokes. And when everything goes wrong in life, you just sit there like some crazy person on drugs. Of course, you know, people just want to try and make this world a happy place. Thinking that somehow or other we can solve the problems of this world by just being compassionate and not making any mistakes anymore. However, after a while of doing that, you find it still does not work, because there is something fundamental about life, and that is that you are separated from things you want, that you are always associated with things you don't want, and that no matter how much you struggle and strive, you try and manipulate the world to try and get what you want and to get out all these pests, you know, who keep you suffering, who are always stopping you. There's always just a few people, if only they could realize, if only they could get out of my way, then I could be happy. And unfortunately, people try that for a while, and they realize it's an endless task, trying to find the end of suffering through manipulating your world, or by even improving yourself. And there comes a time when people say that there must be some other way. Not by creating a stronger will, or not creating a wiser will, or a more compassionate will. Because that's one of the problems. We always think that the will can be trained. That if we are wiser and kinder, if our will is more compassionate, if our will can let go more, if our will doesn't make these stupid mistakes all the time and say these ridiculous things which cause us always all trouble, if I can only train my will, be restrained, be mindful, be wise, be kind, then my will never ever cause me any problems anymore. And you try that and you find it doesn't work, until eventually you realize your will is a problem. Its very nature is to cause suffering. And this is a great realization of yours. To see this will is nothing you should cherish and worship and encourage. but it's actually enemy number one of your happiness and well-being, will. And it should come as no surprise that when you start reading the Buddha's teachings and you come across again and again a person called Mara, and Mara, actually, that they call him actually a male. But I don't think Mara deserves to have gender because it applies to everybody. But Mara is the head of the Paramita Vasavati realm. And basically that word means those who have total control over other people's creating or doing, nimittas, what is fashioned and made. And I always call that Mara the control freak in chief in this universe. It is a personification of your will, only moved to a more universal level, and to a hugely bigger stage. Because influence is your will, is your will, is the problem. And once you understand that the will is the problem, then very often in the meditation, you see the will in the form of wanting something or trying to get rid of things. You say, I know you, Mara. You are the cause of my restlessness. You are the cause of not becoming still and peaceful and entering the jhanas. The will, the doer, the controller. And once you start to see that, you have an opportunity for Mara to disappear and for you to be free of trying to improve yourself and change the world. So often you look at people with very, very good intentions. If you've ever studied your history, and if you've really gone into it deeply, not just read the books, but just gone into the characters of the people who have been on the front stage of the history of our world. So many really went into leadership, into politics, wanting to do the very, very best. They really did have good intentions. But in the end, they caused so much problems and difficulties. And you know, I've been fortunate enough to meet some world leaders in my position these days. And I looked at them, and they go in there with some really beautiful intentions. They are kind. They really want to do something good for their country. And they end up being hauled in front of the Hague Human Rights Commission, International Human Rights Court, you know, accused of all sorts of terrible things. And how do they get from that place of idealism and goodness to a place where they have been tried in front of the world for terrible, terrible, terrible crimes? And you can see that this is the way of will. And we are here, sabbadukha nisarana, to be free of that suffering. And the second part of that statement, to be free of suffering, nibbana sati kamanataya, to be able to realize the cessation, the extinguishing of these things. To actually not just to overcome the dukkha, but actually to see the things like will being extinguished. To experience that, that's part of nibbana. Things puffing, disappearing, vanishing. Something which was there, no longer there anymore. And with that disappearing of will, a huge amount of suffering will disappear. How do you realize that? And not pulling any punches. Second jhana, even the first jhana, is where you find most of will has vanished. I am quite strict sometimes. Saying something which I learned today. This is going to go on record now. This was apparently from Scotty at lunch today, where I'm quite proud of this achievement. It's not really an achievement. I'm only messing you around. But he was saying that he read somewhere or was told somewhere that someone had done a league table of jhana teachers and ranking them for, you know, the bar you have to get to be told by these teachers, yes, you have a jhana. So if some teachers say, well, you don't need so much, you know, piti, sukha, and joy and peace to have a jhana, then they're actually low down. And the higher you raise the bar, the further you're up this league table. And of the seven, which he mentioned, if I get this right, Scotty, please tell me off, it was a nun who will not will remain anonymous. She was number seven. You know, the you got a picture of her in the dining room. She was German. She's a really good nun. I really liked her. But no, her jhanas were the easiest to attain. And number two in the list was Par Ok Sayadaw. He's to get a jhana and be confirmed that was a jhana from Par, that was a tough one. But number one was Ajahn Brahm. My jhanas are the toughest to achieve. I'm quite proud of that. One of the reasons I was telling people that in these jhana states, there is no thought possible. And that even that first jhana, there is a movement of the mind, you know, onto the bliss of those incredible experience. That's all you're experiencing, just bliss, raw, beautiful bliss. And then ask yourself, is what you are aware of? Bliss. Okay? Piti sukha. And it is that type of bliss, you find this out afterwards, it's the bliss born of the five senses and the body totally vanishing. Oh, what a relief. All that heavy burden of having a body and having five senses to deal with is gone. And it's so much freedom. But you're aware, no body, no itchy nose, no sort of tummy ache, no headache, no sort of being able to, having to listen to people, see stuff, process stuff. The whole world is totally gone. Not just the actual seeing, but the echoes of that seeing, what they call the karma vitaka. All those thoughts and fantasies about the five sense world, totally free, out of that place. Absolutely, totally. So, you know, you can't hear, you can't feel the body. People touch you, you wouldn't know about it. They shout in your ear hole, you can't hear whatever they're saying. That's why sometimes they call it the cave of the heart. You know, just the other day when Posada had the mulcha here, and I was outside, it was making a noise, but going inside my cave, I couldn't hear a murmur of that Venerable Posada. It was so quiet in my cave. So as far as I'm concerned, Venerable Posada, you can mulch as much as you like outside my cave, but please be careful of the other monks. It's marvelous being in a cave like that, and this is a simile. If you can get into jhanas, you can't hear anything. It's bliss. Peace at last. But of course, in that first jhana, that beautiful bliss, you know, there is a will there. And you know, after a while of getting to these places long enough, you can actually understand the differences between these first four jhanas. In that first one, there's the last remnant, tiny little, we might call, odor of will, which makes you hold on to the bliss. Attached, if you like, grasp, that takes willing to grasp something, to try and keep it. And a lot of times, where does that will come from? It comes from fear. No fear it's going to lose it, fear this bliss is going to go. You find all will comes from fear, which is one of the reasons why fear and will always go together. That's one of the reasons why Mara tries to tempt people by making them afraid. You know, putting in his army up in front of the Buddha, trying to scare the you-know-what out of you. And this is what happens in that first jhana, a tiny bit of fear, which just makes you just overreact and hold on to that bliss with a bit of will. And that makes it unstable, wobbles. You move away from it. But it's so gorgeous, you just get pulled straight in again. I think actually the pulling your back in, that's not will, that's just automatic. You can't resist that. But the holding on to it, that's where the will is. Also coming from fear. You're still doing something, but it's so little that basically the will is gone. And of course, once you get the confidence, Sampasadana, who's sitting here, once you get that Sampasadana, that confidence, you don't need to hold on to anything. Don't be afraid. Let go of that last bit of controlling. And then, of course, you just, with that bliss, it doesn't move. It doesn't go anywhere, no wobble. And that gives, really intensifies to the bliss of stillness or the bliss of no will left. And that's gorgeous. But this is actually where you start understanding what this will is and how it is the problem, which is why I keep on teaching you, let go. Stop striving. Be in the present moment. No future. You need a future, a perception of some other time than now to have will. Will has to have a place to go to. And if you haven't got a future, that whole perception is totally vanished from you. I mean totally vanished. People try and mess around and think, oh no, I'm in the present moment. They're not. They've still got some future in there, which is why they will. They want to do something and change something and get somewhere and achieve something and be somebody. All just this stupid stuff coming from will. And second jhana, no future, no past. Present moment awareness, and that's pretty present moment. You can't get more present moment than that. And bliss, stillness. You understand will has stopped, ceased. Now you get some understanding. Get in those states a few times, and then that will give you a great understanding of what the problem is in life. It's not getting what you don't want, or getting what you want. The big problem is wanting in the first place, wanting anything. Wanting is just one of the easiest aspects of will to understand. I want. That's part of will. And sometimes you ask, what do you want? For goodness sake. You know, you've got food comes here every day. You've got a place to stay. You know, you've got good teachings. You've got no debt. What do you want? Yeah, some of you are not that healthy, but it's good enough, especially at your age. So, Sangharatna, it's good enough. What do you want, for goodness sake? Isn't it wonderful to be able to have a range retreat? Or at least have some days in this range retreat. You sit in your hut, I want nothing. I want for nothing. I'm just happy being here. The monastery, my health, my hut, I've got everything I need. So I'm going to just no wanting for the whole retreat. Sit there and you sit down, you close your eyes. Jhana, that's not another thing I'm trying to get. If you want jhana, it's so obvious, you'll never get it. Wanting is the problem. Wanting is the barrier. Wanting is a big brick wall you put in front of yourself. I'm content, happy to be here. I don't want jhanas, don't want anything. If it comes, it comes. So you abandon your will. Don't control it. Let go. Be in the moment. Be peaceful. And see it cease. Sabbadukkha, Nisarana, free at last from suffering. Buddha made it so clear. You know, the craving is the cause of suffering. That's why I tell it on retreats. Sometimes the most simple teachings are the most powerful. Unfortunately, they're too simple for most people. Too simple, because they think, I get that. That can't be really serious. It's Ajahn Brahm telling one of his jokes again. And I want the real deep teachings. Two types of meditation. Second Noble Truth meditation. Third Noble Truth meditation. I want to be peaceful. I want to be able to sit for an hour, 2 hours. I want no more aches and pains in my body. I don't want this disease. I want. All those things. If that's what you do when you sit down and close your eyes, you're going to suffer. Wanting is a cause of suffering. So any meditation you have on this retreat, any meditation where you suffer, why? What have you done wrong? You've wanted something. If there was no wanting there, you wouldn't be suffering. You'd be just content, happy. Oh, so what, a jhana today, it's fine by me. I'm content, I'm happy. If you really have no wanting, but sometimes people say, well, if you don't want anything, you never get anything. Precisely. But people, they take away the wanting from meditation. They put it on other things. I want sexual fantasies. I want to get all my jobs finished. Look, I've been in this monastery for 33 years. This is my 42nd range retreat. And I realize that's a very, very special number. I checked this out this evening with the monks. 42 is the answer to the universe. Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. What's the meaning of the universe? And the answer is 42. So this is going to be a brilliant range retreat. This is where I get the answer to the universe. It's already here. I made it. 42. This is the answer. So, anyway, if you can just sit there and not want anything, a lot of times the problem is people say, does it work? It's because, yes, you're not wanting jhana, but you're wanting all this other stuff. You're still wanting, but no, not the jhanas. I just want to write a book. I want to translate this. I want to find out what's happening in the news. I don't know what you want to do. And a lot of times it's getting things out of the way, and then I'll meditate. Which is why one of those sayings which appears in those little books, Happiness Every Day, another saying which people think, oh yeah, this is just pop Buddhism, this is deep Buddhism. When is the best time to meditate? Now. When is the worst time to meditate? Later. You laugh, but that's actually powerful. So when you're in your heart, remember that. When is the best time to meditate? Now. It's the only time. When is the worst time? Later. I'll have a cup of tea first of all. I'll have a rest. I'll have a snooze. I'll just get this job out of the way. I'll write this letter. I'll get this email finished. 42 years I've been a monk. 33 years in this monastery. And I still haven't got everything out of the way yet. Take my word for it, you will never get everything out of the way. So, forget about that. Well, remember that great story? Again, simple stories you've heard before, but really powerful. Ajahn Buddhadasa, making his hall, decided, right, rage retreat, no building, no work. And when a visitor came and said, well, when's your hall going to be finished? He said, it is finished. What do you mean it's finished? There is all the rubbish on the floor. There's no tiles on the roof. There's no glass in the windows. Is this some Zen temple or something? And that's when he gave this brilliant teaching. Wow, this is one of the best. He said, sir, what's done is finished. I love that, because I mean that just cuts through so much bullshit of you trying to think, when I get this done, it'll be finished. No, it is finished. What's done is finished. Otherwise, when can you ever find any freedom from wanting? When can you ever challenge this thing you call will, which you cherish as your most personal possession, as the essence of who you think you are? That's why it's just so difficult to throw out. It's like throwing yourself out. Giving up my will? No way. I'm not going to be controlled. It's not about controlling. No one's going to control you. You're just going to let go. No control at all, not from outside, not for some God, not for some control freak dictator. That's why I don't try not to dictate in this monastery. Sometimes people say, oh, you're too loose, Ajahn Brahma. You should just tell people off when they do things wrong. You should be more firm. You should, you know, be more strict. Make this place more like the US Marines. You should now go to North Korea and take a lesson from Kim Jong-un about how to run things. Be any more strict. There's no reason for the way I teach. And it's not softness. It's wisdom. It's realizing the will is a problem, and I am not going to celebrate will by being a control freak teacher. I'm not going to encourage will in any of you. In fact, I'm going to discourage it as much as I possibly can. I'm not going to tell you when you're going to get up in the morning. There is no bells in this monastery. I'm never going to tell you what you're going to eat, how much you're going to eat. I'm not going to tell you whether you should work or not work during this retreat. I'm not going to tell you when to go to bed at night. This is not just, wow, I am free. No, it's much more deep than that. It is challenging your perception of will. This is a tough one, but this is the only way that I know that you can get some deep meditation and get some freedom from suffering when something ceases. Will and controlling. But it can't just be half-hearted. Sometimes people, again, they give up their will and they're meditating, so they fall asleep, but they will like hell afterwards, doing stuff and planning things. And it's got to be full on, 24 hours, letting go, being here, not going anywhere. Like that other very simple teaching, but powerful again. Going all over the world, hardly ever seeing a human being. Human going somewhere? Yes. Not a human being here. Doing things? Yes. But not being here. And you see that. And after a while you realize, where are they all going? What are they doing? That was a story where good old Jacob Medding. Did we actually chant for him today? Yeah, include him. He caught me in Nodamara Temple, like usual. I had a lot of papers in my hand going into the office. Just before 3 o'clock on a Saturday afternoon before the meditation. Being a kind guy, he said, Ajahn Brahm, how are you? And being a stupid monk, I said, I'm getting there. Have you ever said that? Yeah, I'm getting there. And he was smart enough to catch me out. Good on him. Thank you, Jacob. He was a monk here before, a really good friend. And the only reason he left, he was really sick. So just physically, he couldn't really handle it. But anyway, Jacob said, when I said, I'm getting there, he looked at me and said, where exactly are you getting to? Oops. And I was honest enough. I said, I'm getting to my grave. That's where I'm getting. It's the only place I'm going. Realizing that that's where we're all going. If you're trying to get somewhere, that's the only place you're trying to get to. Is it time to stop trying to get somewhere and be? Stop trying to achieve things and be content? Stop trying to make things better and to have more compassion, embrace things as they are in this moment and have some peace and quiet in your life instead of always improving stuff? So after a while, the penny drops. Stay in a monastery like this long enough and just a light bulb comes on in your head. All these years, I've been struggling and striving, trying to get somewhere, trying to improve things. I've just made things worse. And, you know, life just gets more complicated. Is that really development? Have we actually improved our society? Have we improved Bodhinyana Monastery over all these years? That's why Ajahn Chah used to say, I have built many monasteries, I haven't built many monks. I understand why now. Too much time building monasteries, not too much time being. Being here. Okay, you have to do it. So, sorry, Vinahasapani, you just told me you're going to do the road soon, but you know, they're going to do that road. You have to do that. But have some time when you don't do anything. Really, no planning, no thinking, no trying to meditate. Just letting go of all wanting. See what happens. Yeah, you get tired. But you're happy to be tired. You're content. Tiredness soon goes. That old story, simple, but to me, it is so crucial to understand this. Two parts of the mind, the doer and the knower. Doing just takes most of my energy. And just, I'm an abbot, I get loaded with so much stuff to do. But I know, because it's nature, there's nothing wrong with me. If I have to do so much, I'm going to get tired. I don't mean physically tired, I mean mentally tired. It's just nature, cause and effect. Nothing wrong. It's just the law, the Dhamma. And so, I know if I've been doing a lot, I'll sit down, it'll take a while. Sitting in my hut this afternoon, a couple of hour meditation, first hour, bleh. But I know that, just content with it. Don't try and get rid of it. Accept it, be at peace with it, don't want anything. And then, because you're not doing anything, you're letting things be, energy starts to come back. It's such a nice thing to know and to trust. I know that so well that I trust my body. Be sleepy, just takes time, it's going to come back again. And I just wait there, content with my sleepiness. Nothing wrong with it, it's not against the precepts. There's no rule either in the bhikkhu or bhikkhuni patimokkha, thou shalt not fall asleep when you're meditating. So you just sit there, tired, then energy starts to come. And that's the juicy part of meditation. You know, when you get some energy and you don't do it. You're sitting there watching it all happen. Peace, content. I'm just, okay, not doing anything. So you don't think, like some people do this, and please be aware of this. I've got my energy now. Well, okay, now come watch the breath. Come on, put some effort in. Now I've got some energy. Now I'm going to put some effort in. Or just start contemplating the Dhamma. Look, when there's energy and peace, don't waste it. Keep content, just being still, watching this moment. Not doing anything, the mind does it by itself. The only job you do is to let things be. Be content, be in this moment, making sure that Mara, the will, doesn't get involved. And if you see any will there, I know you, Mara, get out. And of course, the will stops. You are letting go of will. You're letting this moment, whatever it is, be. And it develops. And you find just how so easy it is to meditate when you don't do things. It just happens. And you get energy, you get happiness, you get clarity, you get insight, you get freedom. Sometimes, I remember teaching, I think in Sri Lanka years ago, giving these sort of teachings. I shouldn't have done taught like this, because that's why I keep getting invited back again. So I think the next time I go to Sri Lanka, Ajahn Bambani, I'm going to teach there is an original mind. So I can not have to go back again. Oh, I'm not going to invite this bug guy back. So I can't do that. I can't lie. So anyway, teaching about, well, look, how can you get to a state of cessation by doing stuff? Now, the two are totally different. You know, you can't sort of, you know, not follow the path to get the path. So you have to, if you're going to get to a state of stillness, it has to be done through not doing things, through letting go, through being content. And when you do that, you get these incredible, deep, powerful meditations. But when you do it also, because I never did it, it's not my fault that I get jhanas, not my fault at all. I'm innocent. It's not me. That's why I keep the other simple teaching, which I love saying on retreats, because people always ask you that question. I've said this before, I don't know when, probably not that long ago. They come up to me and say, Ajahn Brahm, come on. be honest, spill the beans. You talk about all these things. Ajahn Brahm, can you get jhanas? Can you achieve it? How often? Every day? Just in the mornings, in the evenings? Do you need a cup of tea with condensed milk beforehand? People are crazy. They just want to know what other people do instead of doing stuff themselves. So, you know, it's difficult because you're not allowed to, according to your rules, Pachiti number 8, you're not allowed to actually tell people of your personal attainments. So that's why you get used to the beautiful loophole. And I love doing this for the first time when people don't know this, just to watch their faces. And I look at them and said, I've got to be honest with you. You know, I've known many of you for such a long time. And I say, Ajahn Brahm cannot get jhanas. I can't do it. I can't get jhanas. I see people's faces and I think, what? I've been following this geezer for so many years. And of course, you know, it's a sense of humour, but it's also, it's deep teachings. And I said, I cannot attain jhanas. Ajahn Brahm has to vanish. I have to disappear. I have to just not there anymore for jhanas to happen. Not only is it giving you a deeper understanding of why that rule is there in the first place, but it also gives you a great understanding of how these states happen. When I am there, whenever there's a sense of me and I, there's always a will and control comes up. Those two just go together. The sense of me and the sense of doing stuff. As long as there's an Ajahn Brahmadi there, you always be doing something. You can't stop it. It's just what the sense of self does. It does things, creates, makes, changes, works. But when that starts to vanish, so does the will. When the will starts to vanish, so does your sense of self. That is one of the reasons why it's so damn difficult to do. You have to disappear. Everything you ever thought you were, everything you cherish as me, the heart of what you think you own, has to all be thrown away. Very few people are willing to do that. Unless they've either got so much suffering, they've had enough, they just, I don't care. Too much suffering, I'm throwing myself away. Throwing off my will. Or you've got enough insight to know that this is the path. You've read enough suttas. It's got inside of you. You realize that this is true. And that is strong enough, you know, the brainwashing, I call it, to get you to say, okay, yeah, this is true, so I've got to do it. Scary? I always say that fear in meditation comes when you're about to let go of something. So when fear comes up in your meditation, brilliant. Well done. Pat on the back. Go for it. Go right into it. See what's going to disappear. When it does, wow. Now you understand why the letting go is what works. And the fear, control, as I say, that's where the control comes from fear. That's why governments try to make people afraid. Terrorism, global warming, economy going down, whatever fear that governments keep trying to make up to make you be controlled. Fear is basically the proximate cause to controlling. So no fear and you can't be controlled. No fear and your mind is out of control. Which means it just gets peaceful. Stops. The thing which moves it, the thing which agitates it, doing, controlling, vanishes. That's why there's Saturday afternoon meditations, because, you know, monks only go once every few months. It's only the junior monks too. The senior monks don't hear these teachings. Just, why do you think? And I started another new simile. This is my job as a teacher. You know, you know the path, you can experience it, but to actually describe it to others so they get to understand what you're doing, and or rather what you're not doing, and what's happening in meditation. To get new similes up is just so difficult, but, oh, you know, you just have one simile and it morphs into other similes, and old similes get new understandings and meanings. So you do actually create some new similes every now and again. And this was one of the ones I really liked recently, was, you know, using the simile of a string, a guitar string. Okay, it's the old simile of, you know, the lute and sona, you know, who's striving too hard or striving too loose, too hard, and it's just like a string too tight, too loose, it doesn't make a good sound at all. And I extended that. What if there's no tightness at all in the string? Just a loose string not being pulled on either end, curled up on the ground. You pluck that, it doesn't make a good sound, doesn't make a bad sound, it makes no sound at all. A loose string makes no noise. A loose mind does not have any thoughts. When you're tight, when you want something, when there's will, when there's control, when there's a goal, when there's desire, that is what makes your mind tight. And the more you want, the tighter your mind is. Using the simile of a string, it's really taut, some of your minds. And it just, a tiny thing hits it, boing, and you think for a long time. The thoughts are just like the reverberations of something impinging on a very taut mind. The more tight it is, the more those thoughts take control. But when your mind is just so relaxed, it's not tight at all, there's no wanting, there's no goals, there's no remorse from the past, there's nothing pulling or pushing at it. Something happens, no noise at all, no thoughts. So you find the more you strive, the more you think, the more you let go, the more the thoughts just vanish. Things happen, just like hitting a piano wire, which is just lying on the ground, not tied at either end, not taut, makes no sound. And that gives you an understanding of where some of the biggest problems of meditation come from. Thinking, we try to stop thinking, and more thinking, because your string is still tight. See, you can find both ends of those string and unloosen both ends. Dwelling in the past, that's one end of that string. The future, wanting something in the future, the other end of the string. Pulling at you, making your mind so tight, think so much, and never get any peace at all. So, brilliant way of looking at your mind. A perception which works so you get still and peaceful. When you do get still and peaceful, what you're really doing, of course, is you're letting go of your will for a little while. And hopefully, not realizing what you're truly doing, letting go of your sense of self, because you get peaceful, because you're suffering so much with your thoughts. Oh, no, with the thoughts come the anger and the ill will and the blaming and the guilt and all this other stuff which just goes in people's minds, creates all sorts of thoughts and drives you crazy. I've had enough craziness in my life and my own craziness. I don't want any more of that, so I'm going to let go. I don't care how scary it is to go to a place I've never been before. Out of my usual comfort zones, as I say, out of the places where I'm used to. Always doing stuff, thinking stuff, planning stuff, making things happen, comparing, blaming, praising, all of that stuff. And then I decide to stop. Let it be, no will. Yeah, I feel I'm just vanishing. I don't really count anymore. I'm not important anymore. I'm just disappearing, vanishing. When that happens, you get so much peace, so much bliss. I often say, well, in my experience anyway, it's the peace and the bliss are just so strong, to hell with the fear. I'm going to let go of everything. because it's just so peaceful, so blissful, so joyful. I think it's that piti sukha. If it wasn't for that piti sukha, I don't know just how anyone could let go. It just draws you in. It's peace, real peace of mind. And peace of mind is blissful, it's joyful. It's better than any other pleasure in the world. It is. Peace of mind is better than Dilmah tea, 2 tea bags with condensed milk. Much better. So obviously, there's this peace of mind. I don't know what you like most in your life, what you think is the greatest pleasure, what you really, really like, what you really want. But oh, just when you find some peace in your heart meditating, oh, that's just so sweet. Oh, yeah. This is what it's all about. This is why I'm a monk. This is what I gave up all that worldly stuff for, what I have to work so hard for to get here. Now I'm here. That is going to be peaceful. And that also inspires other people. They see peaceful monks and nuns because that gives them hope. If they come here and see all the monks and the nuns all over the place, chatting around, talking around, rushing backwards and forwards, yeah, okay, rest of the year, but during the rains retreat, they're going to lose their faith. So we're just the same as ordinary people, like lay people. Yeah, we rush around, you rush around, they go shopping, you go shopping. What's the difference? We'll see peaceful people, calm people, still people. That is really inspiring. Remember somebody once went to see Wat Pa Pong, and they went to Ajahn Chah's hut, and it was amazing, there's no one around. And he was just sitting on his chair. And he just watched him for about an hour. Ajahn Chah never moved. He came out and said, wow, that Ajahn Chah, you know, I see with my own eyes, he really knows how to meditate. He's incredible. He didn't move for about an hour, and I watched him. And of course, he didn't realize that was a wax dummy which they put in his chair. Because Ajahn Chah was in the sick room. He'd already had his stroke. But it's inspiring. But true story, I remember that one. Anyhow, the way you really saw, that's very, very inspiring. And so it's not just for the sake of stillness and inspiring lay people, because it's great deep Dhamma there. And the deep Dhamma is that you realize what the problem is. Mara, will. That's the stuff. So we learn how to let things be. Okay, you have to use your will to go to the toilet. Otherwise, we didn't have any will. If you let go, you'd do all your business right here in this room, and that wouldn't be very nice for the person who has to clean up afterwards. Yeah, but when it gets down to your meditation, just check this out. See if you can really let go and be peaceful, disappear. So say Ajahn Chah can't. So Ajahn Chah couldn't get jhanas either. Ajahn Brahm can't. You have to vanish, first of all. Disappear. There's no you are there anymore. The path is, but no traveller on it is seen. Nibbana is, but not the person who enters it. Do you get it? All the striving makes you a bigger person. So it makes like getting a camel through the eye of a needle. You're just too big to get into Nibbana. You've got to just vanish, disappear. And then, of course, smaller you are, the bigger the eye of the needle is for you. You just breeze through. Because what is this Nibbana? Nibbana Sati Kamanatai. It is cessation, extinction, disappearance. Exactly what I'm saying. And the more you will, the harder it is to disappear. The more you do, the more you are in this monastery. I know there are a few people in this monastery. They just breeze around and you hardly know they're here. They come up for their lunch, don't say a word to anybody and disappear afterwards. Don't come to the coffee club or tea. That's actually banned now for the next 3 months in this monastery. Breeze around, just like wafting through the monastery, like breezes on a warm summer day. Just hardly hear at all. Hardly hear them. They even sit next to you, but you talk to the person on the other side. They're not here. They're the ones that I'm interested in. They're vanishing. They're disappearing. Which means, you know, their will is going. Of course, there are some who act like that, but in their heart they're really restless. But it's a sign of the really good monk, the great nun, who no one actually hears, no one sees. They just do their jobs, but they're not really here. And well, you know, they're in the present moment, but it means that, you know, they're not doing stuff. So, just like I tell people when I go overseas, so why do you travel so much, Ajahn Brahm? I said, I don't travel. I just sit in the aircraft. I'm still. The aircraft moves, not me. That's my explanation of traveling. Other things move, but not you. Sitting in the car, you're not going anywhere. You're still. Change the perception. And anyway, that means that we can learn how to disappear and cease. And with the will going, the thing which moves, when things start to cease, then there is an opportunity to get the insights, because I was talking with Ajahn Brahmani, asked some really nice questions, and it's great to ask me a question on Dhamma before the talk, because that gets my mind in the right mood. And you know, his question was about just stream winning. The person who's a stream winning understands dependent origination. What does that actually mean? Is it seeing like the craving as a cause for rebirth? And I was saying that, yeah, but the most important thing is not just seeing the causal part of dependent origination. A causes B, B causes C. But seeing the cessation part of it. And which, you know, has to go together. But to see that when this stops, that also vanishes. And to see that everything which is cause, all of those parts of dependent origination, they're all causal parts, so they're all ceasing parts. That craving can stop. That rebirth stops. But the juiciest part, the right down the very bottom, the underlying central part of it, when consciousness stops, ceases, then the whole thing unravels. And that's powerful. Consciousness, your mind ceasing. The next part of dependent origination, sankhara, will. See? Knowing and doing. Consciousness and sankharas, will. The two big enemies, right at the very bottom of the cause of suffering. Everything which is of a nature to be caused is a nature to cease. Yang kinchi samudaya dhammang sabantang nirodha dhammanti. So, will is of the nature to cease. Just allow that to sink in. It can cease. It does cease. It will cease. So is your consciousness. Is. I always like to say the six consciousnesses. Yeah, seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching. Yeah, that's... Actually, it's not so obvious. Because I don't know how many of you experience those things ceasing. That would mean that jhana's happened. Really ceasing. I don't mean just a superficial ceasing. One going and another one coming up. I mean really going. Poof, disappeared. Not there anymore. Wow. They're supposed to be here. And it is like sitting in this hall and suddenly there's no hall anymore. No carpet, no floor, no ceiling, no walls anymore. I mean, really going, really disappearing. Not being replaced by some other five-sense object, but the whole lot going. Freaky, weird, but that's how it goes. And you don't mind at all because, wow, you are free. Up to a point, but that's pretty brilliantly free. So this is what happens. And you start to see this is understanding this, experiencing these things going. That will make you a stream winner. you see, all that is in the nature to arise is in nature to cease. You know that because you experience consciousness ceasing. Five consciousnesses, and then seeing the sixth consciousness, the mind, the knower, vanishing. You do this because it's what happens when you don't do stuff. If you do stuff, you keep getting reborn and reborn and reborn, more and more suffering, more and more problems, more and more disappointments, more and more struggle. Haven't you had enough? Just if you think of all your previous lives, if you can get those, it's obvious you've had more than enough. Even this life is enough. I've had enough. Haven't you had enough yet? Do you want to keep on going? Round and round and round and round and round and round and round. So after a while, when you get the message, you let go. To hell with the fear. I'm vanishing. I'm out of here. I don't mean leaving a monastery and becoming a layperson. Being out of here, I mean out of this body and mind. Vanishing, disappearing, go, nothing left. Poof. When there's something left, as the Buddha said, just like you've just been to the toilet and you wiped your bum and there's a tiny bit of shit on your finger, it stinks. A tiny bit of existence stinks. Yeah, brilliant simile. So when everything disappears, whew, that's nirvana. Understanding that. And once you understand that, in our stream, when you understand why you have to let go, why letting go is obvious, why it's what happens, and why everything else in the world doesn't really mean much at all. Building monasteries, looking after the planet, just everything else are just so much, please excuse me again, bullshit. People will do that. You know, when I was a scientist, I remember one of the things which really, really affected me in astrophysics was when they started saying about, you know, the just ordinary, like, solar physics, the nature of the sun, you know, just the fission reaction going on in the core of the sun. Sorry, no, the fusion reaction going, the hydrogen coming together to make helium. It's huge sources of energy, but like any other sort of energy generator, soon it runs out of fuel. Like your car, it's only got a certain amount of gas in it. Okay, I mean, the sun has got many billions of years left, but there comes a time, it has to, it's obvious, it's that the sun will get run out of fuel. And it will expand according to its nature. It'll expand and it will take in the orbit of Mercury. Mercury will be subsumed into this massive, I think, red giant, I think it's called. And then it will expand even further. And I think they were saying that Venus will get evaporated, and so will planet Earth. We'll get boiled away. Will be vaporized. And the whole of all that hard work you did, Venerable Hasopanya Karunika, building Dharmasara, it will just be reduced to dust. And no one will ever know you were there. The whole planet will be dust in the cosmos, with no one, no record of this Dharma talk ever. Finished, disappeared. No record of the Buddha, except maybe in those other realms which survive. But no, not in this planet Earth. All the stuff we've tried to preserve. No seed bank in Norway, Ajahn Brahmani. Everything totally zapped and vanished. To me, that was actually brilliant. I really got into that and thought, wow, there is an ending to planet Earth. It's not eternal. And when he started to see something which you'd taken to be eternal for such a long time, subject to extinction, then you started putting that into your own body and mind, subject to extinction. Not just the body, but the mind as well. Stream of consciousness, vaporized, zapped by nirvana, disappeared, gone forever, with no record left at all. You always never wanted to leave footprints on the beach, always waiting for the tide to come and wash them away. No record of you, your existence. That is how insignificant you are. Brilliant, wonderful. It must be awful to be significant. The least significant you are, the more like you are a dot which is about to vanish. I like the mathematical idea of a dot. It exists but doesn't exist. It's got no dimensions, but it's there. You can't measure a dot. It has no size, but it exists. The dot is one of the most beautiful, the point, most beautiful mathematical concepts. And this might like dependent origination to me, halfway between existence and non-existence. The point, the dot. So I ask you, have you got the point yet? That means the end. So look, you've got this great chance. Beautiful rains retreat. Yeah, some of you got to do to your duties, you've got to do your work. But, you know, I was been working so hard in this monastery, all my life in this monastery. And there was that time when rains retreat, we still had to do, I used to do lots of work in the rains retreat when Ajahn Chacko was the abbot, who was building and doing stuff. And that time when I went up to him and said, Ajahn, it was very wise teaching. I asked him, he said, look, can I just have some time off and I don't need to do this, don't need to do that? And he said, well, the free time you do have, how are you using it? Oh, that just hit me. I wanted more time, but the time I had, I was wasting it, messing around. So even if you are busy, so you think you're busy, you still have time. Don't waste time. It's only yesterday when we had our katina here, end of the last rains retreat. Many of you, you're counting your, you can add another one now, after this evening, whatever you thought you were before, 2 years, 3 years, you know, one extra. How fast has that got? Ajahn Bhumali, Ajahn Appi, was it 23 now? 22?
21.
21. You're 21 today. Da 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 da. You've got the key to Nibbana. You've never been 20. I used to sing that song when I was a kid. 21. How fast has that gone? Remember when you ordained here? First rains retreat? Be careful. Before you know it, it's the end of the rains retreat. So, don't waste time. It doesn't matter how much work you do, you'll always have plenty of time. In the present moment. Da 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 da. Talking about time, better get finished now. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Very good. Well done. Thank you. You did that on cue. Very good. Thank you so much.
Arahaṁ Sammā Sambuddho Bhagavā. Buddhaṁ Bhagavantaṁ Abhivādhemi. Suvākāto Bhagavata Dhammo Dhammaṁ Namassāmi. Supatipanno Bhagavato Savaka Sangho Sankhang Namami.